Taylor Decker's on my all 22 fantasy team.
Stop. They don't care.
So the strategic component to this game is through the roof.
Your predictions, right? Your forecasting in fantasy football into how good is this player?
This is going to, it's going to change the industry.
Yeah. I moved to the old town where it goes down. Look at me now. I wrote my goals down. I hold it down. Made myself proud. Say, look at me now.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into the All 22 podcast. You got Chris and Ray again. This is kind of a special episode. We decided to do this kind of on the fly just because of the shakeup that happened yesterday with the game results. It was too juicy not to jump on and talk about. And honestly, I just can't shut up, right? Like, it's like there's not enough people in my friend group that want to hear me talk about this. So I have to lure Ray in here to, you know, hear what I have to say.
Yeah, and I don't know why I listen, or maybe I don't listen. I just come on and let you speak. But yeah, this shakeup is what gets us going, right? There's always a storyline in every game. Every game means the world to somebody for some reason. Even if you were eliminated from the playoffs 6 or 7 weeks ago, every game means the world to somebody. And I think yesterday's games meant the world to a lot of people in every fan base for many different reasons.
Totally, 100%, right? There was different shakeups in the playoffs. There's different things happening in the draft. Before we get into it, there was a cool little thing, just like a little side topic, little fun little kick off the episode. PFF Gordon tweeted out and asked the question, and I want to ask the question to you now, Ray. How many quarterbacks would be drafted if we started the NFL from scratch, which is basically an all-22 draft? How many quarterbacks would be drafted before an NFC quarterback was drafted?
NFC?
Correct.
Oh, damn. And we're taking age into account, I'm assuming, right? This is a startup NFL draft.
This is a startup NFL draft. You're starting the NFL from scratch, like an all-22 dynasty draft, right? How many quarterbacks go before you select an NFC quarterback? I think the obvious ones are Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, Burrow. We're already at 4. Does it keep going? What do we think of Trevor Lawrence? What do we think of Justin Herbert? What do we think of CJ Stroud? Are we taking those 3 guys to get it to 7 before we start talking about guys like Caleb Williams, Jordan Love, Jalen Hurts?
A lot of people think highly of Herbert. Don't put
Brock
Purdy in there.
I'm one of them. I love Herbert. Love me some Herbert.
So you named 4, and then you named Herbert. There's also Stroud.
I said Stroud. I said Lawrence.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm taking Lawrence over some of the NFC guys. I think that's where it gets close. But I think I'm definitely taking Herbert, which is 5. I think Stroud is debatable as well. He's still super young, so I think he probably edges out Jordan Love. But I think that's where it starts getting really close.
I think Stroud and Love are comparable, but the age difference goes to Stroud there. So I think that's 6 AFC quarterbacks. Although I think the gap between those last 2 names and Love is much closer than people think. I think too many people just automatically lump Justin Herbert in with some of those other names like Burrow. And I don't. I still have him a tier below that. You know what?
There's 2 more names.
I'm going to shake it up. I'm going to go Stroud before Herbert, and then I'm going to go Love before Herbert.
Oh, okay. All right. That's your prerogative. I remember when we did the rankings preseason, that's kind of where you stood. So I expected that. But there's 2 names now that, like, you had Caleb Williams when we debated this in the offseason above Jordan Love. I think I convinced you to let him be behind Lawrence and Herbert. But it's not just Caleb Williams anymore either, right? It's now also Jaden Daniels, right? Jaden Daniels, And I'm forgetting one, supposedly. Sam Darnold. I don't know. Who are you talking about?
Well, this one, maybe I missed it when you named the AFC guys, but I mean, how are we projecting Drake May into this whole exercise?
Drake May, I didn't think of that.
He's doing in the worst offensive situation in the league, and he's making highlight reel plays and and playing above the sum of the parts over there in New England.
Right.
So, you know, could you fault somebody for taking Drake May over CJ Stroud? I might side with that, as a matter of fact. I don't know. Ooh. It's a projection, but
it's a projection. Yeah. And I mean, when you look at the outlook, the future, right? Like Drake May is going to get dropped in there, either one of the top tackles in the draft or one of the top receivers in the draft. And maybe even somehow they figure out both, right? If they trade back with the right partner, get some additional picks.
Boy,
whereas
that'd be a hell of a segue if we save that for the end of this, this question, right? But
yeah, could happen. Right. And then Houston, right. They lost two of their best receivers. Their tackles are kind of poor. Yeah. It's not crazy, man. It's not crazy, but I just wanted to have a little fun before we jump into it. And we are talking about the shakeup in the draft order today. That is the meat and potatoes of this episode, because it was massive. Okay. Number one, as of today, the Patriots move from 2 to 1. Okay. Biggest need so far is receiver, guard, and tackle. They are sitting in the quarterback spot, right? One overall is typically a quarterback. They've lost 6 games in a row. Their remaining game is against Buffalo. And some of this is as per Tankathon. The biggest needs is from Trevor at PFF. So thank you, Trevor. Thank you, Tankathon. But I want to kind of talk about the consequences of what happened here, right? So them going from 2 to 1, what are the consequences for the Patriots in that happening, right? Obviously, this means that they're now the biggest trade target in the draft. They don't need a quarterback. But what does that haul look like, right? How do you start to figure out what that haul looks like? They can move from 1 to 2 with Tennessee. We'll get into where the teams are later, so I won't spoil it, right? But there's a bunch of moves. They can move from 1 to 2. They can move 1 to 3, 1 to 4, 1 to 7, 1 to 8. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of teams in this top 10 that need quarterbacks. Does it make sense to do that? Is Travis Hunter too good to move away from 1-1? Is Travis Hunter a good fit for this team if they don't necessarily need a number one corner and the need is more for a number one receiver? Like, what are the consequences of this move for the Patriots?
They're massive, and they better not screw it up, because you mentioned that game against the Bills, and they might rest Josh Allen. They clinched the 2 seed in the AFC, so they are locked into their spot. Can a Mitch Trubisky-led Bills team beat this Patriots roster? Probably.
What happened with the Eagles and Cowboys the other day, right? Tanner McKee. It could happen.
Yeah, exactly. So strength into overall roster still comes into play, but if you don't want the Patriots to mug this up, because they can get an absolute haul. And so to me, the consequences are enormous. I think people always discuss this in corners of the internet for years, obviously, but I think it really came into focus prior to the Andrew Luck draft, where the Colts ended up winning that sweepstakes. I forget if it was the Jaguars or whoever else who kind of messed that up and won a game that they shouldn't have, and then missed out on Andrew Luck. And now teams pay more attention to it, because this is a more quarterback centric league than it was even in the past, and it always has been for a couple decades now, but with each passing year, it becomes more the case. So the consequences are massive, in the sense that while they have their quarterback, plenty of teams need a quarterback, and there are not many. There may only be one quarterback that teams feel overwhelmingly confident in this class, if any. And so you want that number one spot to hold all the leverage in trade negotiations, to trade down and get a haul for your roster. You have your quarterback, but he has no offensive line and he has no receiving core to speak of whatsoever. So to me, Travis Hunter isn't talented enough to, I shouldn't say isn't talented enough. It's, he doesn't, there's too many needs there to sit and take Hunter and then wait another 32 picks to get the next one piece to your, and add him to your offense, when you can trade down, get a Bryce Young-esque haul like the Bears did, and really change the fortunes of your roster around. I just don't see any one player being worth it, especially one that has questions about what position he ultimately ends up playing, or if he ends up playing both. Sometimes that versatility can spread someone thin. So I absolutely trade down from that spot if I'm the Patriots. And you don't want to give up that leverage in a meaningless game in week 18.
Okay. So I'm happy you touched on that Bears trade, right? Back in 2023, the Bears and the Panthers traded together. They moved pick 19, the 61st overall pick in the second round, a 2024 first, a 2025 second, and DJ Moore to get to 1-1. So I don't know if this quarterback class is seen in that same way, right? Where there's some amazing quarterback prospects at the top that teams are going to really be willing to go broke to go get, right? Especially that trade also, you have to remember they traded from 1 to 9. Are the Patriots willing to do that in this type of a draft class where pick 9 probably takes you out of the kind of like, I hate to say elite because I don't really know if that's the right word for this receiver class, but the top 2 receivers would probably be gone. The top tackle might be gone. The top edge rushers are probably gone, right? So like, do you feel comfortable moving back that far in this type of draft? Even when you look back at that Bears draft, right? They traded back to 9 and they got Darnell Wright. And I think we're sitting here 2 years later saying, was that a good pick for them, right? Like they might move him to guard after 2 years. So what do you think about that?
They should have moved him to guard when they drafted him, like I said. But they don't have to move all the way back to 9. You got Cleveland at 3. You got New York at 4 currently. I don't think they would trade with the Jets, but you got the Jets at 7. You got the Raiders at 8. Holy how the hell did they end up there?
You're blowing it, man. We said we're going to save it, pick at a time, and here you go just like I'm reading them all, man.
Dude, whatever. You said you're on a time crunch here, so this is how I answer the question. I don't know what you want me to do here. Anyway, they don't have to go all the way to 9. So I wouldn't go all the way to 9, but the lowest it seems like they have to go here is 8. And if they go all the way to 8, they're getting a haul. They're going to get multiple firsts and probably a 2 and a 3 involved in something else, like you said, similar to that trade. And I didn't give away all the picks, all right? I just gave away 3 of the remaining 5.
Yeah, you blew it. But I did explore some of the other trades, right? You're talking about some of the smaller trade downs. And I think the one that's most kind of representative of the current situation is the Bears with San Francisco. Notice the Bears are a common theme in this. But the Bears in San Francisco, they moved back one spot. San Francisco moved back one spot. The Bears drafted Trubisky. And the trade essentially was 1-3, 2/3, and a 4th, right, to move back one spot. I think that's fine, right? If you're not going to take a quarterback anyway, to move back one spot, that's great value. I think where I get a little nervous is if you're saying the Bears move back maybe like 3 or 4 spots, where there's going to be maybe a couple teams that trade in front of them or are sitting in front of them that would take the number one receiver, right? I really like the idea of Drake May pairing with one of these top receivers. And I really, when I say top receivers, I mean Travis Hunter, if you think he's that, and Tet McMillan, who I think is that, right? So I get a little nervous saying, all right, if we don't get one of those guys, we're fine getting the top tackle, because I don't know if the tackles in this draft are worthy of a top 5 pick, right? Would it be great for them to go get the best edge rusher? Yes, but we talk about how teams need to find their identity and build that identity, and I want to see Drake May pair with one of these top receivers or, you know, building an amazing offensive line. So that's kind of where I'm standing. I don't know if it makes sense to trade back 3 or 4 spots, but it definitely makes sense to trade back 1.
Yeah. And I mean, I think at least they would trade back 2. I mean, Cleveland is still lurking there if all else holds at 3. And I've long intimated that's a move that could be made. And in that case, you're missing out on one position player. It's possible that Tennessee would go a McMillan at 2 and you lose out on that. But shoot, if you could pick up an extra first from a desperate team, by all means, I would still do that. I think it's still worth it at that point. And then you have Hunter. I mean, I think Travis Hunter would probably go to Tennessee in that case. I don't think McMillan would go ahead of Hunter. So in that instance, you still get your guy. I think you could trade back to 3 and not miss any of your top fits. So I think 3 makes the most sense. I don't see them going below the Giants at 4. I don't. But I think either one nets them an extra first at least. And that's enough for me to move off of that pick. Okay. Drake May needs a lot of help. They need quantity on top of quality. He's already making do with, you know, he's making chicken salad out of chicken, you know what. So for him to, it's not about, oh, he just needs a receiver. He just needs quality across the board there. So, I would still make that move. I think it's worth it.
All right. So Tennessee, you blew it, right? They moved from 4-2. The remaining game is against Houston. They've lost 5 games in a row. And their biggest need might also be quarterback, right? Quarterback, receiver, tackle. It's basically offense. They just need offense in any way they can get it. So the consequences for them, right? I think the massive one is they're now the front runner in the race to be able to draft a quarterback. You know, there's no greater power in this trade offer than moving back one spot as opposed to moving back 2 or 3 spots or 4 spots or 7 spots, right? So I think that's the biggest consequence with Tennessee. And I also would say, I like this situation in Tennessee for a young rookie quarterback. Do I want them to take one of these guys? Do I think one of these guys is significantly better than Will Levis? I don't know. I'm not saying that yet. I don't know if that's true. But I like, you know, that they drafted J.C. Latham. They have Peter Skoronski. They made the move for the center this offseason. So they have the, you know, 3 of the 5 pieces on the offensive line you hope are set for the foreseeable future. They have, you know, veteran receivers in Ridley. I it's not great receivers, but it's good and it's better than what Drake May has, right? It's better than that. So I do like this situation for a young quarterback to step in and be able to play football out there in Tennessee. But again, the biggest consequence is just they're the front runners now.
They are on paper, but no one's just going to accept that they're the front runner. They're going to move ahead of them to get a quarterback. I really don't see how this, I don't see how the Patriots stay with this pick at 1-1. I really don't. If paper holds, they can't sit there. There are too many teams who want a quarterback, who want to get in front of the Titans and make sure they get their guy. And there is such a dearth of supply of quarterbacks in this class, meaning AKA perhaps just one, that someone's going to, multiple teams are going to bid for that spot. And it's going to go. So Tennessee would have to move up one spot. I think if they want their quarterback, they're going to have to move up one spot. And I guess they would have to give up more than what was given up for Trubisky for sure, because there's going to be multiple bidders. They're going to be at least bidding against the, in my opinion, the Browns, the Giants, the Raiders. There's 3 or 4 teams that are going to be jockeying for that number one spot, and they're going to have to make a difference making offer, even though it's just one spot down, for the Patriots to consider moving back to just 1-2. So I get on paper what it looks like. It's not gonna. There's too many people who want their guy for this to work out in the Titans' favor. So they better, they have to hope to lose and for the Patriots to beat, I guess, perhaps Mitch Trubisky in Buffalo in order for them to ensure that they get their guy without having to give up a haul.
I think it gets complicated, and we're going to talk about that with the next team. Cleveland is at 3 now. They move from 5-3. Their remaining game is against Baltimore. They're probably going to lose it, and their losing streak is now at 5 games. Their biggest need, quarterback, running back, receiver, tackle. Basically the offense, right? But we're talking about Cleveland, who's moved massive amounts of assets to get quarterbacks in the last few years, right? And there's going to be dead cap. There's going to be, they haven't had first round draft picks, right? This is their first one in a few years. And you have to start asking yourself the question, how do players succeed when the team can't build around them, right? And they haven't been able to do that as well. They haven't been able to infuse talent. Yes, they struck gold, hopefully, in Jerry Jeudy. So maybe the receiver position isn't as bad as it seems on paper. Cedric Tillman looked good too for a few weeks there. So maybe they have a 1-2 there with those guys, but their tackle play has been awful. They don't really have running back anymore, right? Nick Chubb is probably on his way out. Jerome Ford is solid, but you know, he's probably the lower ranks of running back in the NFL. And then obviously quarterback is the biggest need, but if they stay at 3, I think it's fine, right? Go draft your quarterback at 3, get the guy that you're comfortable with. But if they have to move up, if they're the team that has to move up to 1, I don't know how they justify spending more assets on that position when it's going to affect their future. It just has to.
Of course it is, but this is what they do. They want to splash. They have a solid roster for the most part outside of offensive tackle. Again, for the most part, Myles Garrett has maybe a couple years left. He's really taking that defense to a whole nother level. They have a strong secondary. Those pieces, those core pieces aren't going to be together beyond, in my opinion, 2026, I would say. So yeah, I think they can justify going all in when you consider their ownership that's in place that has obviously shown they want to make a splash, and they will do something like that. Would it be the smartest move? That's a different debate for a different episode, perhaps. But I think they go for it. I think they're so done with Deshaun Watson and they're so tied to Deshaun Watson, they have no other choice. But if they want to make a move for any type of viable quarterback to address it in the draft, because you're going to have to pay a mid-level starter upwards of $35 million a year. And you can't do that when Deshaun Watson is still on your books. So you have no choice but to get a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal, and you're picking as high in the draft as you're likely going to for a couple of years. Maybe you're in the same spot next year if you do nothing, but the brass that's there, Kevin Stefanski, the GM, they don't want to, they wait another year and have a duplication of the 2024 season. They might not have a job. So they have all the incentive in the world to go all in, make some moves to get a quarterback, get some buzz around them, where even if they miss the playoffs next year, they at least have something to look forward to and something to sell to the fan base so they can keep their jobs. And if it doesn't work out, it's the next GM's problem. No skin off their back. So that's what I think keeps them in here. Even if from an all else equal, if you're just looking at everybody as digits and numbers here, it might not be the best move for the Cleveland Browns long-term. Humans are involved and humans are complicated people. And that's what I think mucks this up a bit more and keeps them in the sweepstakes for 1-1.
Okay. I mean, if you say so, man. All right. The Giants are at 4. This is probably the biggest, hit in the entire draft. They go from 1 to 4. Their remaining game is against Philly, who looked great this weekend against the Cowboys. They've won one game, right? That's why they moved back. Biggest needs we know is quarterback. We've talked about it. Tackle and corner are also big needs for them. The consequences of winning this game, right? They move behind Tennessee and Cleveland, who are also QB needy teams, and now they're sitting at 4. The only thing that I think might be their saving grace, if Shador is the guy that they want, does it kind of sound like Shador wants to play for the Giants? And does that give them some kind of advantage, even if they, either they have the advantage in trading up because that's the team he's going to play for, or do they just get to stay put because teams are going to pass on Shador because they know he's going to want to play for the Giants?
That ain't going to happen. That someone's taking Shador regardless. I mean, the Chargers still took Eli Manning, right? If it ever comes to that, the Chargers still took Eli, and then the Giants had to trade for him. And boy, we could have an episode about that one as to who actually won that trade. But in any event, yeah, I said it. No, it's not going to factor at the end of the day. Even if Shador wants it, I think it's minuscule, whatever advantage that probably gives them. It might give them more incentive to give more, to go up and get it, because Joe Shane is probably in the same situation. Joe Shane and Brian Daboll there, to where they need to show something, some type of proof of concept this coming year, or else they're out of a job after next season. So they have to show something. So by all means, they have incentives too, to put their chips on the table, have something to sell the fan base after next season, or else it's the next GM's problem if it doesn't work out. So same thing applies there. The human incentive here is what makes this all fascinating, because objectively, this isn't the quarterback class to give up a haul for a guy. There's not that level of prospect at quarterback in this class. There just isn't. The top guy is seemingly Shador, and he's pretty much the only one. Some people may like Cam Ward and what he brings to the table, but I think it's a clear delineation between the two. And yes, it's just the timeline of employment, I guess, is what is going to launch some organizations into giving up assets for Shador that they otherwise would not in a rational world. So yeah, Giants are in the same predicament that the Browns are in as far as having to sell something, or else they're also probably out of a job after next year.
Yeah, I would think so for sure. Jacksonville moves from 3 to 5. So they are sitting at 5. They won a game this weekend against Tennessee. Their biggest needs are guard, tackle, and cornerback. And the consequence, honestly, I don't think it's a big impact on them. Obviously, I don't tell teams that are in, you know, to move back in the draft when they're not a playoff team. I don't think that's ever a good strategy. But, you know, I think the guys that they want and need, right, maybe like a Will Johnson, maybe a Kelvin Banks, maybe, you know, some of those guys, I don't think it's bad, right? Those guys should be there at 5 for them so they can get one of those guys and it's still going to make their team better. Carolina moves from 7 to 6. So they are now sitting at 6 with their loss this weekend. Their remaining game is against Atlanta. Their biggest needs, wide receiver, edge, and linebacker, if you are bought in on Bryce Young, which I am. Consequences. I think like the Jags, it's really not that big of a deal for Carolina. Might take them out of the McMillan draft spot, which would have been really nice for them. But I think that there's still a chance that you can get Burden at this spot. Nick Scowerton should be available at this spot, right? I doubt the other edge rusher from Penn State is there. But, you know, I don't think it's a big deal. So Jacksonville, Carolina, they move slightly, but, you know, I think these are still good spots to be in for them.
I don't know, man. The more I watch, I think there's about 4 players you really want, and then you probably want to be picking in the early teens. If you just missed that cutoff, it's a problem. So again, putting the quarterbacks aside, because it's just a different beast altogether. You've got Hunter, Abdul, McMillan. Who am I missing?
No, come on. I'm going to get into the film and I'm going to tell you it's more
elite,
than that.
Elite.
No, yeah, right. Elite there's player. There's probably not that elite talent there. But then, like I said, I think Luther Burden is good.
Sure. But if you miss an elite talent by one pick, if Abdul Carter goes off the board right before you go on the clock, and now you're I got Luther Burden. Like, Luther Burden's, he's fine. He's very good.
That's a tough sell.
You could have had a potentially top 6 edge rusher in the league for 8 years. And you missed him because you won an extra game in 2024 that nobody will remember.
Yeah, no, it's something to think about. And I mean, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not telling these teams to win games, but it's not detrimental to the future of their franchise because they won a game or moved back in the draft.
To lose every, as soon as you're out, just lose, just lose.
You're starting Tanner McKee and Tommy DeVito. All right, the Jets go from 8 to 7. They've lost 2 games in a row. Their remaining game is against Miami, who hasn't looked good themselves, right? Biggest need is quarterback, I think, tight end, defensive interior, and corner. What are the consequences of this? They are probably not in the quarterback race right now, being that there's 3 teams ahead of them and like well ahead of them that also need quarterbacks. And, you know, the other thing that's kind of interesting, though, is they're a pretty well-built team, right? Like, when you look at the other teams in this top 10, there's probably not a roster that's as well-rounded as the Jets is. Is that pretty accurate? Would you agree with that?
100%. They're the strongest roster in this entire list here.
Right. So, I mean, for them, though, in my opinion, you know, I just read off quarterback, tight end, defensive interior, and corner. I think their corner room is okay. I don't think that's a huge need. Defensive interior, I talked about, you know, Mason Graham would be a great fit there. Tight end, yes, but I think 7 is too early unless a Brock Bowers is there that, like, you just don't do it. I would love to see them add another receiver. Like, the receiver room in New York for the Jets is still really not that good, right? As much moves as they've made, as many as of the Rodgers guys as they have brought in, it's still just not great, right? Like, and it could be great, right? I think Garrett Wilson has the potential to be a great NFL receiver. If Davante Adams sticks around, right, that's a really good 1-2 punch, but you're relying on a 32-year-old receiver to be your number 2. I never want to do that, like ever, ever, ever. So for me, it's Luther Burden here. It's Egbuka from Ohio State. Like, there are those guys that I think would be interesting at 7. Maybe if it's Egbuka, you want to trade back a little because maybe that's too early for him. But if not, you're probably going Mason Graham or Kenneth Grant at 7, which I think is great. And I think that's good value. But again, it's like, how do you make this the best situation so that when you do end up drafting that next quarterback, that it's a good situation for them to go into? And to me, that's receiver. That's praying to God Olu works out a tackle, and that the interior of your offensive line just stays healthy for the first time in the last 5 years, right? I think that's what needs to happen.
One thing I'll mention about the Jets is that they are going to be ushering in a new head coach. So they're not quite under the same anxiety, the same urgency that some of these other teams we've been talking about are, like the Giants, like the Browns. New coach coming in, he's not getting fired after 1 year if they have a poor season because either Rodgers is gone or Rodgers is just old and things don't work out, similar to how they did not work out this year. They're still going to be – they still have job security there, and they could take a swing next year in a presumably better quarterback class and take their shots then. They did draft Malachi Corley with their second pick last year, which was in the third round, the top end of the third round, out of Western Kentucky, a Yak receiver. So, I mean, they have young talent in the room. It's just, you know, clogged up by all of Rodgers' best friends. But they have some talent there to where, to me, Mason Graham, especially if Luther Burden's off the board, but even with Luther Burden there, I think Mason Graham would be the top player on your board at that point as the best non-elite but great player still available. And I think they go there. I mean, it's not like they have a bona fide next to Quinnen Williams. So if he's the best player, go ahead and take him. But if there's one team, if I had to put one of the teams mentioned as far as trading up for a quarterback in this scenario as least likely, it would be the Jets, because they kind of were able to hit reset, at least as it relates to the front office brass, the coaching staff, to where they're not under the gun to do something in year one or else. So take the best player available if there's no viable trade back option, which I'm not sure anyone will be clamoring for at this point in the draft. Take the best player. If it's Graham, it's fine. If it's on defense, it's not sexy, but it works. If it is Burden, if you love him that much, then sure, that works too. But yeah, you can take your time, and yeah, you just have to pray that your line is healthy, because you have the talent in most critical spots on this roster. It's just not healthy and just hasn't gelled.
Yeah, exactly. Vegas moves from 6 to 8 with another win. They're second in a row. 2 weeks ago, they were picking 1. So they've essentially gone from 1 to 8 in 2 weeks. Biggest need is quarterback. Running back, cornerback is, according to Trevor at PFF. The consequences of this, they might be out of the quarterback race altogether at this point, right? Like, there are 5 teams ahead of them that need quarterback now. So I don't know how they can outbid somebody unless, again, they go for broke and they say, all right, we're giving 3 first-round picks to trade up to 1-1. Is it possible? Absolutely. But I think at this point, the Raiders really need to be the team looking at other options. Could Aaron Rodgers actually end up going there? Could Kirk Cousins go there? Is Jameis Winston going to be there? Do they pay a ton of money and bring in Sam Darnold? Daniel Jones? Do they trade for McCarthy, right? Like, there are guys out there that would be not the worst case scenario. It's not like you're trotting out Gardner Minshew again and Aiden O'Connell, but it's not good. I mean, unless, again, you land Darnold, it's really not good. It's not promising.
No, it's not promising. This is why you don't win games in December when you're gunning for the top spot in the draft. If I'm Max Crosby, I don't want to see Daniel Jones walk through the door there. Like, oh yeah, this is where I want to spend the tail end of my career after playing like 1,000 snaps a year. I don't want that. So no, I do not sign me up for that whatsoever. If Antonio Pierce is still the coach at that point in time, I don't think he should sign up for that either. Might be another next GM problem. Let's go ahead and get Shadur here and give people something to be excited about. But it starts with not winning meaningless games. But I think the Raiders in general are a bit better than people give them credit for. They are. Their line is not bad at all. Their offensive line, that is. They could use a prototype receiver. This would be another Burden spot if he falls this far. Or Ibuka, for example, although Ibuka to me is more of a strong 2 than a 1, but you know, it's 2024, it's going to be 2025. You can devise a passing game with Emeka Ibuka and Brock Bowers as your focal points. You can absolutely do that. Is this a little rich for Will Johnson? Possibly. I just, if I'm sitting there in the Raiders front office, how secure am I in my job? That's what this all comes back to, because in a rational world, if you have time, address the secondary. There's some good fits at this point in the draft for that, like a Will Johnson, perhaps that receiver. But if you need something to sell and you need to get to 8 wins, 9 wins to keep your job in 2025, you're going to want a quarterback. So at least if it doesn't work out so great, you could say, hey, you know, we showed some progress and Shador's growing and you don't want to switch things up. Some guy, Chris, wrote a great article about what happens when you change head coaches with young quarterbacks. So keep me around and let's let them grow. There's something to sell there. And I think that's what this all comes back to. And that's what muddies this up so much is the incentives of those who, you know, are on the hot seat. But I agree with you. Otherwise, this is pretty darn far back and you'd have to give up too much of a haul for, again, what we're talking about at quarterback in this class. It's not the fit for that, but if your seat is hot, your seat is hot. Nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. I think if a GM doesn't bring in pick 1-1 or 1-2 to get one of the top two quarterbacks, if you think there are two quarterbacks in this draft and you don't sign Sam Darnold, you are out of a job. Like, you will be fired. You cannot, like, they basically went for broke last year, right? Like, they went for broke again this year and they just didn't do it either time. Like, they won meaningless games and it's putting them in a really weird position where, like, you have a good team. Like you said, like, this is a pretty well-built team. You need a quarterback to lead the ship, to right the ship, and they're not really putting themselves in a good position to do that. But we'll see. At number 9 is Chicago. They stay at 9. Their last game is against Green Bay. They've actually lost 10 games in a row, and I'm going to keep talking about it. Their biggest needs are interior of the offensive line. It's also maybe tackle, and it's defensive interior. It is the trenches. And the consequence, I think you need to sit at 9 now, and you need to just take the best offensive lineman available in what might not be a great offensive line class. And you might not even get the number one guy right at 9. So I think that's a little tough. But you know, if they lose again next week, they might be picking closer to like 7. And if that happens, yeah, maybe they're in a good position to draft that offensive tackle of the future. At 10 is New Orleans. They stay at 10. Their last game remaining is against the Buccaneers. They've lost 3 games in a row. Their biggest needs are also the trenches. It's interior of the offensive line with guys that have gotten injured, guys set to be free agents, and it's defensive line. They've put resources into that defensive line in the draft. Guys just are not hitting, unfortunately. And the consequence is O-line and D-line just have to be what you take. It's one or the other. Luckily, I think at 10, if you can go either way, it's probably a pretty good situation to be in. We talked about Kenneth Grant maybe being a guy that's there at 10. If not, you know, Kelvin Banks, some of those offensive linemen, like, someone will be there for them. I don't hate it for New Orleans.
Yeah, it's just bad. Just stay there and just pick a good player and be bad for a few years. And we'll see you in 2027 or something and see where you are at that point. It's not really redeemable in 1 year. And to tie it all back to all 22, like, okay, how does this impact me in all 22? Well, A, if you're someone who selected Drake May, you are doing a happy dance and you are praying that they don't win next week and that they can take advantage of a haul for Drake May to bring him the help he needs, because you know that with those assets, they're going to address offensive line and wide receiver, which most directly impact his performance. If you're someone who has Malik Nabers, I have a lot of Malik Nabers shares. I'm going to talk right through the Christmas clock here. I have a lot of shares of Malik Nabers after last year's rookie class. I'm not sure how I feel about the Giants trading up to get a Shador Sanders. I mean, that might work out for just Malik Nabers in particular, because then you kind of have just the quarterback receiver battery there. But outside of that, there's no help coming for anybody else anywhere else on that roster. You're not, if you got Deontay Banks, you're not getting much help on that defensive front anymore. You're not getting help on the second level of that defense either. There is no synergies that are coming if they make a move to trade up for Shador Sanders, because they won against the Colts this week in week 17 in a meaningless football game. So this has material impact. If you're someone who has Brock Bowers, I have a lot of Brock Bowers shares. I think that situation in particular is probably more quarterback proof than others, just given the nature of the position he plays and the way he plays the position, the amount of targets he gets regardless. We've seen what he's done with subpar quarterback play and things of that nature. So if you have a core piece of your roster on one of these teams that are quarterback needy and kind of jockeying for position for a quarterback in this draft, the moves they make or don't make can still have a big impact. And I think that's what we're really all circling around is, we don't, I think I could speak for us. We don't foresee any quarterback in this class becoming top six or eight in the NFL over the next 10 years. But it's just a matter of what are these teams doing to get themselves in position to get a quarterback, and how does that impact the guys that you already have on your all 22 roster? Because quarterback is the highest valued position for a reason, obviously, in the NFL and on this platform because of its downstream effects. And that's everywhere on the roster. So you're probably a bit safer than others if you're looking at Brock Bowers and how this impacts him, but someone like a Malik Nabers, a Jerry Jeudy, you're a bit more curious as to how this whole thing shakes out, because they need some reinforcements at quarterback, or else they're hitting their ceiling and likely can't sustain that ceiling over the long term unless they get some sort of baseline quarterback play that they've not received to date.
I'm not willing to say that yet, that neither of these quarterbacks or none of these quarterbacks could be a top six quarterback. I'm not willing to say that yet. I'm going to do my deep dive. We're going to talk about it on the podcast, and we're going to come to that conclusion, but I'm not ready to do it yet. But everybody, thank you for tuning in. Please give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and X at @all22_PFF, and give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. Have a great day. Happy New Year.
Go.